Let's go. Welcome to the Sixers Talk Podcast. So glad you could join us. Danny Pommels, Noah Levick, Ben Berry in the cut as always. What is up? Glad to be with you people. We are closing in on game one Saturday, 6 o'clock South Philly of the Sixers and Raptors series. We got some playoff basketball last night, two games, the Nets and Cavs, as well as the Timberwolves and Clippers. And there will be no tears here on this podcast like Patrick Beverly, but some exciting basketball, Noah. I mean, let's start there a little bit. Obviously, a lot of people were talking about the way the Timberwolves game ended with Patrick Beverly jumping on the scorer's table. He was crying. He took off his jersey and threw it in the crowd. And it wasn't just him. There were other guys celebrating and running around for the Timberwolves. And then the TNT guys joking about how the Clippers had won the championship. They put the Queen, you know, We Are the Champions music to it, the one shining moment stuff. Too much, you think, Noah? Was it too much for them to be celebrating that way? I think it was too much. What do you think?
I lean toward not being especially critical of guys caring a lot about winning and showing their emotions. I agree, in a different fan base, like in Philadelphia, where the expectations are deep playoff success, that would have been a source for intense criticism. But hey, it's the Minnesota Timberwolves, and that's a big deal that they are advancing to the real deal of the NBA playoffs. So I honestly don't mind the passion and the vulnerability and the emotion. I think that's part of how fans connect to players and what makes sports cool, but it does leave you open to some of this sort of criticism and some of the jokes. And we will see how Minnesota fares if they win their first round series. You know, I imagine
it's a good matchup. Good matchup between Memphis. They split the season series 2-2, although we have seen situations like that portray themselves a lot differently in the postseason, where teams might play close in the regular season. There's a different story in the playoffs. But a 2-seed versus 7-seed, I think the thing for me is I think it went a little too far. I think he jumped on the scorer's table twice, like once down here and then ran down to the other side. So, it was a little too much. I like the vulnerability, like you said. And baseball, maybe football as well, they do celebrate along the way, you know, just by winning the division, which you definitely don't see in the NBA. Baseball guys celebrate, obviously, a lot longer of a slate, almost twice as long if you add it all up. But with 162 games compared to 82. But, it is what it is now. It's part of NBA history at this point, because it was funny just seeing some of the reactions on social media. Ja Morant, LeBron James chiming in and not even saying anything, just the laughing emoji. And you kind of know, you know, what they're laughing at. Shaq was on the TNT broadcast saying, when they posted LeBron's laughing emojis from his Twitter account, like, oh, you got four, LeBron, but Pat Bev, he got one now, like as if they had just won the championship. So it's just a great league and theater outside of the sport in a lot of ways. And Pat Bev climbing on his Instagram Live and telling the Clippers to go to bleep home and all, you know, just all of it, the full gamut. And this is why we love it, right, Noah?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to complain about any emotion or anyone acting like humans, you know, not like robots. Unlike in the NFL, of course, these guys don't have to wear masks. We see the expressions, we see just who they are as people, and
you can read lips. Yeah, the fans are a lot closer. It's a unique experience.
Absolutely.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Now we are, like I said, closing in on game one of the 76ers series with the Raptors. Some interesting things to get to with that. We'll talk about some X factors We'll discuss some MVP chatter revolving around Joel Embiid and how his contemporaries view him. But let's start with Doc Rivers. And you are going to Sixers practice at the facility later today, a couple hours from now, if I'm correct, Noah. You were there yesterday. And some interesting moments there as Doc Rivers not only was candid, but he also allowed for more time to get questions in and a little bit of an extended session there with the media, which is interesting compared to how snippy or short Kurt he was with the media, you know, in the previous, you know, final game post-game press conference. What's up with that? Just before we get into what he said, what do you think is did someone speak to him, you think, or what was the difference between his you know, after a win, him being uptight about the questioning about something as insignificant as backup center minutes, and then, you know, being, you know, gregarious and open and long-winded, you would say, you might say, here at the practice facility?
Yeah, I think it's open to interpretation. I will say, yeah, it's a contrast from how he usually is. It's happened quite a few times where it'll be a short press conference and he'll joke, oh, you guys are the best, with a big smile on his face and doesn't mind getting out of there quick. So it did seem like it was at least on his mind or on his radar a little bit of, hey, like, for today, I'm going to not mind if this runs a little bit long and people have some questions to ask of me before the playoffs. So yeah, there are certainly some avenues that you could consider likely as to why that is the case. But hey, anytime we get to talk to him for a little bit and get some insight and some candor, as you said, it's appreciated, and we'll take what we can get. Obviously, these sessions are usually not moderated, but there's, hey, you know, a couple questions left. And he said, no, we can do more today. So yeah, it was an interesting availability in that he talked, of course, about the series itself and how the Sixers are approaching it. And then also was asked about some of the rumors I think we raised last week regarding the potential of him moving elsewhere after this season. And he was strong in saying he's not a candidate for other jobs and that he considers just all that buzz about coaches and where they might go to be disrespectful and something that makes his life harder. So that's where he stands on this coaching rumor situation. And he was adamant that he's very happy in Philadelphia and, of course, focused on the job ahead in the playoffs.
Yeah, the job is not done here as the Sixers try to overcome this second round, overcome the setbacks that Ben Simmons kind of put this team in. And, you know, okay, it kind of comes to the territory as far as the rumors and the innuendo of who could go where. But I definitely feel Doc Rivers on the idea that in this coaching fraternity, oftentimes you're asked about replacing people, even front office people for sure, and players for that aspect of being traded to teams where, you know, guys might actually be playing the position that they're playing. So you're being talking about being shipped off to a team where somebody occupies the place where you will be taken over. So I get Doc Rivers on that thought that he's a part of this coaching fraternity and you're asked about replacing guys who may currently be in place or just lost their job or someone you may have worked with before or probably know really well or generally well. So it's a little weird. It's kind of a odd aspect of the job, and Doc saying that he's happy here, but I would definitely put some stock in the idea that the Lakers are interested in bringing him along, but they are probably interested in a lot of candidates, Nick Nurse. And as one of our producers, Casey Feeney, put it on Twitter, it seems like the Sixers-Raptors series between Doc Rivers and Nick Nurse, whoever loses it gets to coach the Lakers. So it's weird, though, Noah. Like, you get these moments in time, and Doc Rivers, obviously a coach who has come into difficult situations before and kind of put them back together. So I don't see these rumors going away, particularly if he continues to succeed or if the Sixers somehow part ways with Doc Rivers here over the next, you know, couple weeks.
Right. In my eyes, success would probably quell the rumors significantly. So they do indeed get beyond the second round hurdle. I would find it hard to believe this is a topic of discussion, but absolutely, as we've noted before, a lot of unpleasantness is potentially on the table for this team. They lose to the Raptors and the coaching isn't good and the stars don't play well and various negatives that very well might happen here. But yeah, I think his point certainly about the circumstances of Frank Vogel's firing being unfair, I agree with that wholeheartedly. You know, Vogel was learning about this news via Twitter, it seemed like, and said to reporters, "I haven't been told anything." You know, used a stronger.
That's not what he said, Noah.
Yeah,
used that's not what he said.
Stronger language, but justified to be colorful in that instance, because that's just not treating a guy like a human to allow that news to leak out to a reporter before you actually tell him. I think the Lakers situation overall, there's obviously some serious messiness there, as evidenced by the Vogel situation and Russell Westbrook, this very disastrous season that he just completed, and that team, you know, just collapsing completely down the stretch and missing the playoffs. So doesn't look like an especially desirable job in those ways, but of course it's the Lakers, it's LeBron James. And if you go through Doc Rivers' past, he has been good in these spots where he takes a team at least to that level of like making the playoffs after they were previously, you know, significantly below that. You notice with him that he likes bringing up the memories of the Orlando Magic team that he improbably led to the postseason, and then also the 2017-18 Clippers, I believe it was, where they got into the playoffs despite not having any All-Stars. So I think he understandably is proud, just going back through his coaching history, of times where he led teams to performance above expectations. So maybe if you're really stretching for a reason why the Lakers job might be compelling to him, that could be one. But just taking what he said, of course, at face, focused on the job here, pleased with the situation in Philadelphia overall. And I do largely buy all of that because he's about to coach in the playoffs. And sure, this could go badly, but it also could go great. He has two All-Stars on his team. He's got a great young player in Tyrese Maxey. He's shown potential for massive series turning performances. So, you know, focus on the series, focus on the job at hand as much as you can and try to block out that outside noise.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And of course, it is Los Angeles. It is California. The money would be great as well. He's obviously have a lot of time in LA. So going back to a place you're familiar with and a building you're familiar with, you know, there are definitely positives in that regard for a guy like Doc Rivers. So let's dig a little deeper here. And Doc, you know, was long-winded, like I mentioned, then he's spoken of various topics. And, you know, trying to dissect this series and where things stand, I'm going to bridge a little bit into the X factors. And if we could talk about that, I think it'll definitely tie into, you know, Doc's comments as well, because Doc Rivers is my X factor for the Sixers. But when I was looking for commonalities and things that pertain to Rivers and Nick Nurse, I realized, like, both of these dudes coached Kawhi Leonard. One of them coached him to the top of the mountain and an NBA championship in short order, where Doc Rivers had the Western Conference Finals, you know, in his sights, but couldn't overcome the Nuggets in a 3-1 lead with Kawhi Leonard. So, you know, I don't know if you can just, you know, winnow it down to just, you know, the success that they had with this, you know, all-time great player, but it does say something about the way that Nick Nurse was able to coax, you know, a championship out of Kawhi's talent and his availability. And, of course, all that wouldn't have happened with those four bounces that the ball took on the rim against the 76ers. But in the bubble, which is definitely extenuating circumstances and unlike anything that has ever been experienced in the NBA, but once again, you know, the past and the things that Doc Rivers couldn't do with other teams kind of came back to haunt him. And once again, he blows a lead and isn't able to get over the hump there. So it's something I thought was interesting. Do you think that holds any merit with you, Noah?
Yeah, I think it's one point of evidence that the Raptors certainly might have a coaching advantage in this series. I don't think it's the end all be all, but absolutely, like, Nick Nurse was extremely impressive in that championship season. And the Clippers bubble collapse, of course, there are many reasons why that happened, but Doc Rivers was obviously among them. And that was, of course, a spot where it was not only the notorious blown 3-1 lead, it was blowing double-digit leads within some of those games themselves and him failing to stop that bleeding. He actually did bring that team up yesterday. He was asked just how often your perception of your team's chances heading into the postseason aligns with the results. And he said he thinks for the most part it matches up. And for that team, he said there honestly wasn't a high level of confidence in large part because the key guys just hadn't played together that much, and he really wasn't too sure whether they'd be able to gel effectively and go on a deep postseason run despite that roster's talent. So certainly that is one of the lower points in his coaching career, and he's had a chance to coach quite a lot of stars, and now it's another opportunity. Just the 1 year with the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid duo, and now it's Joel Embiid and James Harden. And again, if this doesn't go as the Sixers hope, the lack of time together will probably be a big reason why. James Harden's only got 21 games under his belt and has admitted that there are aspects of his role here that are still not especially comfortable. So we'll see how much that harms the Sixers and how well Doc Rivers can do to overcome some of those difficulties. But I think you're obviously on solid ground in having concern about whether the Sixers will be at a coaching disadvantage this series. And a big reason for that is just Nick Nurse is very, very good. He's widely regarded as one of the NBA's best coaches. He's famous for his creativity and extracting the most of what he's got on his roster. And they just have a very strong core identity as a team of just being difficult to beat over a 7-game series. Now it's on the Sixers and Doc Rivers to try to make that happen.
And the organization of the Raptors just continuing to develop talent and find talent and, you know, kind of get the best out of guys. And, you know, it seems based on Doc Rivers' words and what he said at his presser yesterday that, and particularly he wasn't open with, you know, looking forward toward the Raptors series after the final game of the season, but he seemed to have a grasp on their quickness, the transition. Obviously they played them four times this season. He talked about, you know, not blitzing them and having, you know, their big so far from the basket and, you know, the fact that they're trapping with a guy who's 6'7", 6'8". He seemed to have intimate knowledge of all that, but I think the thing that makes him my X factor for the Sixers is getting beyond that when, you know, when trouble comes, you know, getting beyond what you know on the surface and all of the obvious things and the things that you prepare for. What happens when there's something that you didn't prepare for, or something that is unorthodox or makes you uncomfortable, or something of that sort? How can you, you know, reload and re-examine what's on the floor, how you can make it work, and scheme your way past the opposing coach? So that's why he's my X factor. You hit on a lot of points of why Nick Nurse is a great coach and why he's mentioned in a lot of these things. I think that is, you know, really a match made in heaven with his approach to coaching and the way the Raptors organization develops players. It seems like he would have a steady pipeline of, you know, of guys who are overachievers. You know, the organization's thinking outside of the box. You know, it just, I don't know why you would want to leave that to go somewhere where you had less control, like the Lakers, where LeBron James and whoever is pulling more of the strings. But who's your X factor, though? If Doc Rivers is mine, who's yours for the Sixers?
Yeah, so mine was a much less marquee name. I was just going to go with Shake Milton.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great, though. Cause
yeah, I feel, you know, kind of sheepish saying it. Obviously, like, I could point to, you know, James Harden's three-point shooting or something big, but I feel like everyone understands for the Sixers to do well in the playoffs, Harden's
superstars have to play well.
Yeah, yeah. Has to play at a high level. For X Factor, I sort of think of what could turn a game, or where there's maybe a high degree of variability. I think Shake Milton over the last 3 or 4 weeks has come on strong and given you some reasons to hope that he could turn in a big performance or two. Of course, we remember in the Hawks series, Sixers are on the verge of having just a catastrophic night from their bench, and the all bench heavy lineups costing them a game. And then he just goes off and almost single-handedly wins it from them and is knocking down long threes after this stretch where he was overtaken by Maxey in the rotation. So I think with Milton, we've seen there's a core level of poise and resilience that is really nice to call upon in a playoff setting. And then just the on-court product's been good. He looks comfortable. He looks confident. Obviously, it was the Detroit Pistons, but it was darn impressive in that game how well he's done over the last couple of years, just exploiting his size and strength advantages over other guards. This guy with a 7-foot wingspan and who's gained muscle over the last two off seasons, and he's figuring out how to make the most of those tools that he's got physically. When it comes to scoring, when it comes to playing through contact and finishing kind of quirky with his left hand, and these little skills that he's got that maybe other guards across the league don't possess in quite the same way. So I think for the Sixers, we know the bench is a major question mark. I think, of course, they'd love if George Niang continues to be a super high volume and high-level three-point shooter. But for me, you know, James Harden, of course, the primary ball handler most of the time, but and Tyrese Maxey, of course, will get reps there as well. I just think you don't want to have to lean too much on those guys. You'd love a little extra scoring, extra playmaking, and someone can, like, just win you a game that is unexpected. That would obviously be awesome as well. I think Shake Milton has that potential. But of course, is it guaranteed? Not even close. And that's kind of why I'm more inclined to put him in the X factor category.
I have more faith in Shake Milton coming off the bench and overachieving with the confidence that he's been showing, with the opportunities that he's been given, with being further up in the rotation, than I do Doc Rivers overcoming himself, because I feel like Doc Rivers thinks he's a better coach than he actually is sometimes. And I think that kind of gets in the way of him seeing that something's wrong and making adjustments because he feels like he can just ride this prevailing thought all the way to the finish line regardless. And, you know, you mentioned earlier him trying to stop runs by the opposing team by calling timeouts or making adjustments that, you know, slow them down or give your team momentum. So I don't have a problem with you mentioning Shake. I think that's a great point as compared to Doc Rivers. I see what you're saying, but I feel like Shake is a guy that we've all been waiting to put it together. So many things to like about him. He's been, you know, hampered by injuries at earlier points in his career when he was trying to, you know, battle for minutes coming up from the G League and whatnot. And, you know, he's a guy that can create his own shot. He's a guy who can, you know, get hot. He's a guy who can, like you said, he can do various things. So I think that's a great X factor. And I'm hoping that they continue to put Shake in situations where he can succeed, because I feel like he benefits from being on the floor with James Harden, a guy who can set him up more as opposed to Tyrese Maxey, a guy that might look for his shot more than pass the ball.
Absolutely. I think that's been a balance there, continuing to go for with Milton, just giving him chances to break guys down off the dribble, but not leaning on that too much. I think at this point they've settled on, he's not a pure point guard. He's probably going to often be used as an off-ball player who will get catch-and-shoot opportunities. But I don't think they want to entirely abandon, like, hey, you know, we like your matchup. Go and get us a bucket. So they'll try to hit on that fine line, and we'll see if they can pull it off. Are we given X factors for the Raptors as well? Because I have one in mind, but I will opt against if we're.
Why don't we do this? We are doing X factors for the Raptors. I have one in mind too. Let's take a break. We'll come back with the X factor for the Raptors. We'll talk Embiid's peers lauding him for the MVP, but he still probably is behind the eight ball in winning it. But we'll dive into that coming up. We'll take a timeout and be right back on the Sixers Talk Podcast. Make your move in 2022. A Wilmington University education can take you where you want to go. Spring classes start January 10th. Apply today at wilmu.edu. Noah, the floor is yours. I will respond after you about my X factor for the Raptors, but who is your X factor for the Raptors?
So I'm going to go with Precious Achiuwa. I think against Joel Embiid, he's going to be impactful, and he's defended Embiid well the last couple of games. And then also, if you look at why the Raptors beat the Sixers both times they played them with James Harden in the lineup, Achiuwa scored 20-plus in both of those games. And in this last meeting, he hit a career-high 5 3-point shots. So he's not in the Raptors' first choice starting lineup. Most of the time they go small and have had success with that. And I guess small is like a debatable term with this team because of how many 6'8", 6'9" guys they have. But, will Achiuwa start? Will he play huge minutes the way he did in these past two games? And can he sustain that offensive success? I think these are all really impactful questions for the series, and not a sure thing because he's a young player, right? Like, it's, you know, he's only 22 years old, and he's going against a 27-year-old MVP contender. But I imagine if he continues to shoot hot from behind the arc and be smart and sharp defensively against Joel Embiid, then that enhances Toronto's upset of winning the series considerably. Just thought it was funny too, looking back, you know, one other game he played against the Sixers this year was against Andre Drummond when Embiid was out with COVID in November, and he only shot 1 for 10 in that game. And the Sixers, you know, almost pulled off the shorthanded Tyrese Maxey-led victory. But Achiuwa, in these games that Embiid has been active in and that Harden's been active in, you look at why the Raptors have won, and he's one of the first few reasons why. But again, I think it's probably fair to put him in that same broad category of, okay, he scored 20 plus the last two, but would we be surprised if he shoots one for 10 in one of these games? No, I wouldn't be. He's 22 years old. He's playing in a high-stakes playoff series against great players. So I think his play will swing this series one way or the other, is my sense.
Yeah, players like him who the Raptors have in droves are why so many fans were afraid of playing this team in the first round. I am not one of those people. I feel like the Sixers are one in the six. But you can see why the interchangeableness of them, the positionless stuff, the way they can run, the youth, it speaks to some advantages that they have over the Sixers, and particularly Joel Embiid, who is going to be double, triple teamed on the offensive end and work hard on them. And then on the flip side, you have these, you know, smaller, you know, big men stretching the floor and making Embiid work even more on the defensive end, being further away from the basket, having to guard the three-point line and things like that. So that definitely, you know, is an area where I would have some concern if the Sixers can't control the tempo as much. And particularly if Embiid's playing more minutes per game, which he will be, that's a longer time he'll have to guard these smaller, you know, conceivably quicker players. So I think that's a great point. My X factor is Fred VanVleet. So here we are, you know, four games that they've played against the Sixers this season, three of them without VanVleet, but he is fearless. He is playoff tested. He can shoot the basketball and get extremely hot, and he can get into seams and creases and, you know, penetrate to draw, you know, defenders to him and find guys off of that. So I think, you know, him and the Sixers maybe having issues which are haven't quite completely been addressed about perimeter defense, about guys like him who can, you know, accelerate the pace and can penetrate off the dribble. That a player like that does not make me feel comfortable against the Sixers roster, who is obviously, you know, a bit of a lesser defensive team than they were with Ben Simmons. So I just look at VanVleet and what he brings, and oh yeah, he averages, you know, only 20 points a game, but for some reason these players just play so much better when they play in the Philly jersey. I'm glad the Sixers have the home court advantage in this series, and hopefully they can build some momentum in these first two games and protect home court to go into Toronto, where they won't have Matisse Thybulle to slow down Fred VanVleet potentially, or, you know, if they need him to do that, or even if he'll be on VanVleet, we'll have to see. But it just it's something that I don't feel comfortable about going into the series, and could be a big X factor for the Raptors.
I think they obviously, you know, believe in VanVleet and love the player he's become, but the reality is his numbers dropped off drastically after the All-Star break. You look at it, it's like mid-30s field goal percentage, and there's this lingering concern here with his knee and how healthy he is and what sort of explosiveness he will have. So perhaps the Sixers do catch a break in that he's below 100% health, and that continues to lead to inefficiency and lead to a lesser version of VanVleet. But the game back in November, that was an entertaining duel between himself and Tyrese Maxey. Both guys scored over 30, and Maxey learned a little bit about VanVleet as a savvy player who just finds ways to get open and get shots for himself. And I remember was fun after that game. He talked about being a quote unquote kid and watching VanVleet at Wichita State and you know, thinking he would become a great player. So yeah, if the Maxey VanVleet matchup continues to feature, we'll see how it plays out. We'll see how Tyrese Maxey holds up defensively, but I think just the question of whether VanVleet is the best version of himself, the Raptors are probably asking that one as well heading into this series. Just to go back a little to your point about Embiid guarding guys behind the three-point line, and you know, my expectation is that especially given that it went well in that 2019 series. Embiid will continue to play high leverage minutes defensively on Siakam, and the Sixers will ask Tobias Harris to guard, you know, post players, which he's done often and well over the last couple of years. So I think the Sixers are actually pretty well equipped to cope with stretch centers and to enable Joel Embiid to guard non-centers because of what Tobias Harris can do against big guys. So I don't think there should be a great level of concern there. But absolutely, like, their guards playing perimeter defense, yeah, we'll see how that works. Rivers didn't directly say we're not going to blitz or anything like that, but he said one-on-one defense will be important. And you just look back at some of his previous comments this season, he sees blitzing and the subsequent scrambling as a challenge with defensive rebounding. And he's concerned about their defensive rebounding, so I don't think he wants to risk that too much. So we'll see how the Sixers hold up defensively, but I think if you're just looking strictly at, can the Sixers guard stretch fives? If DeAndre Jordan's not in the court, like, the answer is probably yes.
I don't disagree with you, because you can't expect Siakam to have a 37-point triple-double every time out against the Sixers like he did against the last time against the Raptors. Raptors and Sixers played. I don't like what I saw from Joel guarding Siakam. He didn't quite look as quick, fleet of foot as I might have liked. But I guess, again, all one game, and you make some great points. I also don't like the, countrymen aspect of the battle between him and Siakam, because I feel like that gives Siakam, who and the Raptors, who are the underdog in this series, more fuel. And I feel like that gives Siakam more, you know, it brings that Pat Bev personal nature to the matchup where, of course, Embiid has that as well, but he's got a bullseye on his back every game. Every game he's got to be virtuoso. Every game he's getting double and triple teamed. Whereas Siakam doesn't have always the dynamic motivation that playing another NBA player from his country might provide. So that's just me and my, you know, thought process. But you make some great points, and I hope they play out the way you mentioned. Here we are with Embiid. You know, the MVP is a regular season award. The regular season is over. He is potentially, you know, the top two people for the award, but it depends on who you ask. Because if you look at Basketball Reference, the MVP tracker, which our guy Ben Barry likes to lean on and has some super accurate information as it pertains to people who have won the MVP in the past, Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and then Joel Embiid in the rankings. But Kevin Durant, who obviously has had this affinity toward Joel, mutual respect, spoke, you know, freely about the award and the fact that he thinks Joel should be the MVP this season, but the fact that maybe everyone doesn't see that way, and he'll just have to deal with not winning it. And as Durant has in the past, where he probably thought he was the best player in the league and didn't win the MVP. I thought that was interesting to come from Durant, and, you know, him to, you know, heap praise on Joel continually like he does. But he's obviously, you know, a student of the game, loves competing and being a part of the NBA and, you know, having knowledge about the league. Is it that cut and dry? Is it just, you know, sour grapes for Joel? It just doesn't seem like he's going to be able to win the MVP this year, you think, Noah?
Seems like we're leaning in that direction, but I guess until all the ballots are cast and recorded, we don't know the answer. But yeah, it seems like
help us make it make sense, Noah. I know you are a guy who studies the advanced analytics. I don't lean on those as much personally. How are people able to make the case for Jokic so much more based on the numbers and how some of those advanced analytics play out, and how does that set Joel back?
I wouldn't say I personally lean a ton on on those, I mean, I think you got to incorporate context a lot, and that's very difficult to do if you're not watching the team every night. So, yeah, perhaps people leaning on those too much could lead to some flawed arguments. But I think there are also many, many good arguments for Jokic and Giannis and Embiid. Like, all the guys are strong contenders. I think in a broader sense, what I've noticed is, like, having to defend an MVP or having to prove that you are worthy of being a repeat winner, maybe that's not as big a deal now as it was like 10 years ago. So I think historically there are cases where Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant probably should have won the award, but they'd already won it multiple times, and a new star player ascending to among the league's best was sufficient for them to win MVP. And it just doesn't seem like people perceive things in the same way. Part of that might be that there's more scrutiny of just who actually is most valuable, and people take their ballot seriously as opposed to just, oh, hey, you know, Steve Nash is having a great season, so I don't love the idea of Kobe winning again, and Steve Nash is going to win the award. But look, every voter has their own opinions, their own rationale. I think also it does seem like the prevalence of, like, recording where the race is at and monitoring what is most likely probably does influence the way it ultimately pans out, which is a little bit unfortunate. You probably do have some people who see, okay, Jokic went ahead in ESPN's latest straw poll, and even if it's not conscious, that makes them a little more inclined to vote for Jokic because they see that's where the majority is leaning. But I think for the most part, every voter genuinely, you know, every voter genuinely does do their best, not even for the most part. But of course, it's a flawed process, and it's hard to imagine one that would be anywhere close to perfect, right? Like, no one can watch every single second of every single game and have the flawless understanding of what all the numbers mean or how one should capture what's most valuable. And we've even gotten, I think, to a weird point where we're trying to figure out which guy's teammates are worst, because that is seen as a significant factor in who is most valuable, because, you know, the guy, the star player, overcame his teammates not being good to lift his squad to a good record. So it's just, I think, so muddy right now. And when there is, like, an overriding narrative that one guy is pulled ahead in the race, maybe that does lead to these situations where, unfortunately, that carries the guy to the top. But we'll see how it all plays out. The current sense is that it's not going to be Joel Embiid. Maybe Sixers fans will be pleasantly surprised, but it does look like Kevin Durant's opinion will end up being in the minority as of now.
Yeah, man. You know, it's funny because earlier in the season, I saw people giving Jokic a pat on the back, feather in his cap toward the MVP award because of what he was doing without Jamal Murray. And it's like, you know, so to your point, suddenly it's like, oh, he doesn't have Murray and he's doing all this, so that makes him a better MVP candidate, as opposed to, you know, Joel not playing with Ben Simmons. That doesn't make him a better MVP candidate too. It's like, you're not comparing apples to apples, or it just doesn't, like you said, you're stripping away some of the essence of it when you're trying to, you know, make those type of nuanced calls. But I will be happy with a co, I think. I will be happy with a co MVP award.
Yes.
I don't know if we'll get there.
I can, yeah.
But
I'm imagining the odds of that. I don't know how to calculate them, but there must be one in a million,
right?
100 ballots,
right?
And there are three guys who are going to get votes. It's just not going to happen, unfortunately. Though that would be satisfying, and that would be cool, and I think everyone would appreciate that outcome. Reminds me of, is the high jump in the Olympics when the guy shared the gold medal, and I love that moment. I think most folks would be satisfied with that too, but it's just not really possible with MVP voting. I will say, like, I genuinely don't think Jokic's teammate quality overall is that good. You know, Michael Porter Jr., of course, you know, with the early season injury as well. And you look at some of the players that were getting rotation minutes for Denver, they're just not great NBA players, except when Jokic is on the court with them. And of course, Embiid has had some nice talent around him in Tobias Harris or Maxey, but it does feel odd to me to use that as justification for him not being worthy. But ultimately, the whole point is figuring out who is most valuable, who is most worthy. Jokic has a lot of really good arguments. It's not just the advanced numbers. Of course, the traditional statistics are excellent as well. Embiid did win the scoring title, but Jokic averaged over 27 points per game, did so more efficiently. Again, I'm not saying any of this to argue that Joel Embiid shouldn't get a ton of votes and that he would be an unworthy winner, but just I think if anyone sees Jokic as just absolutely undeserving of this award, or Giannis as well, I don't think I agree with that point of view, though I can understand. Here in Philly, we watch every single Joel Embiid game. We are deeply appreciative of his journey to this point, and we understand how great he is in a way that Nuggets fans do not. But their guy's pretty good too. Giannis is pretty good too, and him having two MVPs already shouldn't disqualify him from the award. So we're in a position where any outcome for any of these fan bases besides their guy winning, it seems like it's probably going to be heavily frustrating. And right now, it looks like the focus for the Sixers and Joel Embiid is obviously on the playoffs, and they might have to settle for something less than an MVP award.
Yeah, Joel might just have to settle for being invited to the ceremony and winning the scoring title. It is also worth noting that the Nuggets are not like a top four team in the Western Conference. They're not probably going to be in the Western Conference Finals. So there is some of that where maybe the Sixers won't either, but I will consider them more a contender than the Nuggets. But all of that being said, what we do have to appreciate is this amazing resurgence of the big man, this new version of this 7-foot player who can score from all over the floor, can pass and, dominate the way Giannis does. It just the resurgence of an effectiveness of giant human beings in NBA basketball. The Sixers schedule is out for game two, which will be Monday at 7:30 in South Philly. Game three, 8 o'clock Wednesday at Scotiabank Arena in Toronto. And then Saturday at 2 will be game four. So on the first game and the third game, both of those games will be on NBC Sports Philadelphia. We'll have a simulcast with NBA TV. Well, I guess not simulcast, but side by side with NBA TV and ESPN. TNT has the exclusivity for games 2 and 4, but we will have pre and post game shows after every game of the Sixers postseason. So make sure you keep it locked on NBC Sports Philadelphia, NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com, as well as the My Teams app. Noah, anything we didn't get to that we should cover or touch on?
I mean, I think we covered most of it.
Did you give your prediction?
I have not locked in a prediction yet.
Noah, you said that the last.
Yeah. So I will say that right now my gut feel is Sixers in 7 games, but like ultimately what I write in the actual article and hit publish on the site, I believe I'll be doing that Friday. That's going to be the official prediction.
All right.
I think most likely that will be Sixers in 7, but we shall see. We might recalibrate a little bit.
We will respect your process. Yeah. I will.
I still would like to be at these next few practices, kind of get a read of things as well as I can. But as I said before, I think my sense is it'll be close. And there are a lot of ways that this can swing, that the Raptors will make it tough on the Sixers. But the Sixers have the better top-end talent and are likely to win for that reason. I'm a little reluctant to go Sixers in seven because I did that for the Hawks series, and one of my reasons was how incredible they'd been at home, and Sixers lost three home games in that series despite having this, you know, 80-plus percent winning percentage at Wells Fargo Center for the last few years. So unpredictable. They do have home court advantage. You'd think that's probably better than not having it. And it does at least mean that Matisse Thybulle will be available more often than he's not. So right now I do lean toward the Sixers winning it, but I definitely do not think it'll be easy.
We will respect your process. I apologize for inundating you with my perspective, and we will wait and make sure you check out NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com for that article, a preview of the playoffs, and happy Easter to all those who celebrate out there, as we will not speak to you before then. So enjoy the games. We will be with you again early next week. I am Danny Pommels. He is Noah Levick from NBC. Okay. All right. 3-2. So Saturday is the day for game one. We will have a pod Saturday night, and then we'll rejoin you again after that next week after the game on Monday. So for everyone, have a great weekend. We will see you again soon. For Ben Berry and Noah Levick, I'm Danny Pommels. We'll see you next time.